No, it's crazy because I saw Megadeth as a kid. You know, I was about 15 years old, and at the time I lived in near Paris, in France, and the Clash of the Titans tour was coming in town, and it was one of the very first shows I saw. I only saw like a couple of shows before that, so seeing, you know, Megadeth back in like 1990 and now being part of the band is just unbelievable, you know. Yes.
Hello and welcome to this special episode of Bumzack in English. My name is Sascha Madsen and I speak with drummers on my podcast. My guest today is Dirk Verbeuren. In this episode, we talk about how he started playing drums and how he became the drummer of Megadeth. Have fun!
Bum Zack, der Schlagzeuger-Podcast von Sascha Madsen. Unterstützt von Tauma.
Hi Dirk.
Hey Matt, how are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Yes.
Yes, feeling amazing right now.
Oh, that's really good because we met earlier today and you're on clinic tour right now today at the Klangfarbe in Vienna in Austria, and the tour is still since a week or so, I think.
Yeah. We already did. This is the fourth show, so yes. We already did three shows earlier this week. Yeah.
Yes, and it's just you on the stage.
Yes.
Could you describe what you do on the clinic?
Basically, I play songs, mostly Megadeth songs, you know, of course, because that's my main job these days. But I also play a few other things from the past and some new stuff as well, some different things I've been working on. But also, I think a very important element of the clinics is the interaction with people. So. Usually I will talk a little bit about my path as a musician, and then also I open up things to a question and answer session, and which usually ends up being, you know, very interesting.
Yeah. How long took it today?
Probably about an hour and a half, an hour 45, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you did some signing stuff and...
Yes. I also meet the fans afterwards and take pictures and all that fun stuff, you know. Yeah.
Oh, that's so nice. Yeah. You're from Belgium.
Yeah.
And you play in one of the biggest metal bands of all times. How come?
You know, Matt, I ask myself this question too. No, it's crazy because I saw Megadeth as a kid. You know, I was about 15 years old. And at the time, I lived in near Paris in France. And the Clash of the Titans tour was coming in town. And it was one of the very first shows I saw. I only saw like a couple of shows before that. So seeing, you know, Megadeth back in like 1990 and now being part of the band is just unbelievable, you know.
Yes.
So I'm not really sure how I ended up here, but I do think that... you know, being determined and persevering with my passion has something to do with it.
Yeah, absolutely. When do you start playing drums?
Basically, I was about 15 years old when I got my first drum kit.
Oh,
so
okay.
I played different instruments before then. I played violin, I played some guitar, some piano.
Yes.
But then my parents noticed that I was really like getting into drums and tapping the beat and, you know, listening to heavier music, hip hop and metal. And so then my dad bought an old Maxtone kit from his cousin who used to play in a jazz band but wasn't playing anymore. And so that became like my place to release all the teenage angst and the energy after school.
Yes, but it's the perfect way to do so, is it?
I believe so. It's a very healthy way because, you know, at that age you have a lot of, you know, sometimes conflictual things or anxiety. You know, it can be hard as a teenager figuring out life and how to navigate stuff. And it was really fun for me. I remember coming home and just before I would do any homework, I would just go to the room where the drums were and put some music in the headphones that I liked and just play really hard and loud until I was very tired and then do homework.
what kind of music do you put on your earphones?
It was a lot of extreme metal back then because then I was listening a lot to, like, of course, all the thrash bands like Metallica, Megadeth, and Slayer and all that, but also more extreme stuff like Morbid Angel and Napalm Death and Terrorizer and Suffocation, Obituary, all the death metal bands from back then, you know. And I just, you know, I tried to play along to everything, and some stuff I didn't understand at all what the guys were doing, so I just made my own version. But also some other stuff like Red Hot Chili Peppers and Primus, more groovy stuff.
Yes. So you're 15 and you have a drum set and you're playing very hard stuff. What was your way? Do you took lessons or was it all self-practice?
Self-practice in the beginning, yes. Yeah. I didn't take any lessons.
Oh, okay.
For the first 3 years, which was basically until I finished high school. Yeah. It was just me. And then also in the later half of that, I started kind of jamming with some other schoolmates. Yeah. And we actually played a show together, like at the graduation day of our year. You know, there was mm-hmm. a stage outside at the school, and so we went up and played some covers. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so, and then actually a really funny thing about that, so this was my very first live show ever, and one of the songs we played was Symphony of Destruction by Megadeth.
it's perfect.
Little did I know back then at age 18 that, you know, now I will be playing this song every night.
that's a really good story.
Crazy, right?
I love it.
Yeah.
So, go on.
Yeah. So then I still hadn't taken any lessons, but then my parents basically asked me, so I graduate high school, right? This is 1993, summer of 93. And they're like, what do you want to study? And my dad was a scientific researcher. So I kind of always had in my mind, well, I guess I will do some scientific stuff. So I liked like biology and geology quite okay. I wasn't passionate about it, but I was interested. So I said, well, maybe something like that. And my dad kind of looks at me and he goes like, are you sure you don't want to do music, you know? And I'm like, well...
That's a really great step. So this is a big thing.
Yes, my parents were great, you know. They're super supportive and they knew, you know. They knew that my real passion was music because they saw what I was doing all the time, right? Like, school, I had to do, and music I wanted to do.
That's good to hear.
So without them, I definitely wouldn't be here, and, mm-hmm. and I thank them for that very sincerely, you know. So then they sent me to a music school in Nancy, which is northeast of France, close mm-hmm. to the German border.
Yes.
And so I moved there, and all of a sudden there I am, you know, in this school that's like, you know, professional, modern, like rock, pop, jazz, you know, all these kind of different things.
Yeah.
All of a sudden I'm living on my own. I had no idea how to do anything because up until then I was, you know, my mom was like, you know, cooking food and washing clothes. And all of a sudden I had to like figure out like, wait, how does life work, you know? Okay. So it was very funny. I remember she was telling me on the phone, like, this is how you cook rice and this. And then I would do it and I completely destroyed the rice, you know, like funny moments. But it was a great time because the school was amazing. I started then really learning about mm-hmm. drums and technique. We had some really cool teachers. Some of them I'm actually still in touch with to this day.
Oh,
because,
cool.
Yeah, that's they nice. Inspired me so much. And especially a jazz teacher named Frank Aguilon, a French jazz drummer who's just absolutely incredible. And he's mm-hmm. very inspiring to me. So I really then started developing as a player and also formed my first band, Scarv, back then.
Ah, okay, cool. Yeah. But how does it work? Because you said you was self-taught. And then you went to the school and played jazz with it's a real big step.
It is a big step, you know. Of course, it wasn't like I came in there the first day and played jazz. In the first classes, they would do more like basic, you know, technique and just basic exercises. And I had kind of forgotten how to read because when I was playing violin, when I was really young, I was, of course, reading music. But then I kind of forgot. So then I was getting back into at least reading the rhythm.
Yeah.
And but then eventually over the months, you know, it built up to like jazz lessons and, you know, Afro-Cuban rhythms like, you know, samba and batacuda and all this stuff. So it was a very tough learning curve, but I was drumming like all day, you know.
Okay.
Sometimes in school, like 9 hours of lessons and then come home, eat something and then play 4 more hours, you know.
Wow.
So, but I'm really glad I did that because it was very intense, but that's the whole foundation of my life today is those years, you know.
Okay. So what happened when school was over?
So school was over and then I had, of course, Scarve, my band, and another student said to me, dude, you are much better than this hard rock teacher we have, because the hard rock teacher we had was a really nice guy, but he was kind of a slacker when it came to the lessons, you know. Like he would come in like, and we had an hour lesson with him and he would have like one feel like, okay, I'm going to show you this feel. So, okay, then we all learn it for 5 minutes and then that's all he had.
Oh, okay.
And then he was kind of like, okay, well, let's listen to some this, you know, and then he put on some music and like the lessons were kind of like, and we're all like, okay, this guy didn't really prepare anything, you know. So my fellow student, who was a lot less shy, because I was a very shy kid, yeah. So he was a lot less shy, and he said, you should go to the director of the school and just say that you will be a much better hard rock teacher. I bet you he'll give you a lesson, you know. So I like, kind of thought about this, and like, maybe my friend is right, you know. So I took my courage and just walked up to the director and like, I think I can do better hard rock lessons than this guy. Wow. And the director said, really? Okay, well, you have lessons next week. We'll see, you know. So then all of a sudden I'm like, now I have to stand in front of the class, you know.
Yes.
And I was like 20 at the time, you know, yeah. Super young. And a lot of the students were like 25, 28, like older kids than me, you know, like actual adults, you know.
Yeah.
So super scary, right? Yeah. But it was my first steps, right? So then I started kind of learning this. So I kept for many years doing like 1 or 2 days of lessons at the school while I was living in the city.
Yes.
So this gave me a little bit of money and a little bit of income, and at the same time having a lot of time to work with Scarf to develop the band. Then I also started doing session work and playing with different bands as well. So slowly it started growing and I started getting quite busy, you know, and of course building experience along the way.
Yes.
So this continued basically from like, you know, I was in the school from 93 to 95. I started teaching there in 95, and until like 2004, this was kind of my path, you know. For the next 10 years, it was a lot of session work, touring with you know, different bands, with my own band, doing session recordings with different people, that kind of stuff, you know.
But still
making very little money and struggling to make ends meet.
I can imagine.
But then, so if we continue, then in 2004, all of a sudden I get a call from the label manager who had put out some albums with Scarve at the time, my band.
Yeah.
And he said, hey, do you know the Swedish band Soilwork? I'm like, yes, of course. And I was listening to them and loving their music. And he said, well, the guitar player would like to give you a call. May I give you his number? Or may I give him your number?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. I was like curious now, you know, what's going on. And then the next day or something, I got a call from Peter Richards, who was like one of the founders of Soilwork and the main songwriter. And he said, hey, Dirk, like, we heard your stuff in Scarve. Like, he had gotten an album from the label manager, you know, and loved the drums. And we love what you do. And we actually need a drummer for this upcoming tour because we don't have a drummer right now. We'd like to ask you to join us on the tour if you want. So so then I did the tour with them and it went really well and we got along really great. And so that was kind of my first step to really come to a somewhat of a professional level, you know, and start to make some money from, you know, touring and merch sales. And then eventually, of course, I start recording with the band, and then I joined the band full time the following year. And we were touring a lot, you know, like in 2005 we were touring like 8 or 9 months, and then when I was home I was touring with Scarf, so it was like insane, you know. I was never home. So then eventually I joined Soilwork full time in 2005, and eventually like had to quit like some of the other projects like Scarf and stuff because there was just no time to do it. But it was my first step into like, okay, I could realize playing with these guys and everything that like, okay, now it's professional, now this is a whole different level, and I was learning a lot of new stuff.
I can imagine,
not just from the music but like the business and how everything works, like what's a tour manager, what's a booking agent, you know. How does this work, putting festivals together, like all this stuff, because I had really very little ideas about this before,
of course, you know? And it was good money, wasn't it?
I mean, it wasn't great money, but at the time for me it was better than what I had, which was nothing. I mean, before it was like I was literally like scraping like food scraps together to survive, pretty much. You know, it was like, you know, I was writing for some metal magazines and some drum magazines and teaching a little bit. And maybe I had a couple of private students, but I was always like struggling, you know. Sometimes I had to call my dad and be like, hey, dad, like, could you send me like 400 euros to pay the rent this month because I don't have anything? And then my dad would be like, yeah, no problem. He was always cool about that because he said, look, if you went and studied medicine, you would be at university for 6 or 7 years. I would also have to help you. So like, it's no different. But then he said, you know, you have to find some way forward at some point. So the Soilwork call came really at a good time for me. You know, I was almost 30 then. And it was a time when I was like, okay, something needs to happen. And it happened.
That's good. That's pretty cool. Do you play with Soilwork? Until now, or
no,
until when?
So I played with Soilwork for 12 years. From 2004 was my first tour with them, and then until 2016 when Megadeth called, I was in Soilwork. And then when I got the call from Megadeth, which was very similar, you know, I just got a call out of nowhere from the management for Megadeth, and they said, Dave Mustaine wants to talk to you. Can you make some time? Yes, I can. And very funny. Yeah. And, you know, crazy moment. Like, I couldn't believe what just happened. And, and then, of course, once I... first, I was just filling in, but then Dave asked me to join the band pretty rapidly. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, I knew right away that I wouldn't be able to do both bands because not only would it be impossible logistically, but also Dave doesn't want his drummer to play in another, like, active big band. You know, it's not possible. So so then the Soilwork guys were very supportive, and they said, of course, we totally understand that you have to go do this job. You know, it's the best gig ever. So, so then since then, life has been pretty nice.
Oh, that's so good to hear.
It's a dream come true, even though I never even dared to dream that. So it's even beyond a dream come true, because for me, I was just happy to be making music and to be, you know, even though sometimes it was a struggle and stuff, but I was like, well, at least I'm doing what I love, and my wife is very supportive of what I'm doing. And but again, Megadeth came at a really good time in my life, where her and I had just bought a house in Los Angeles. You know, we made this big commitment, and it's an expensive city to buy a house and to live in. So we were like, I mean, I hope the next years are going to be good. And then a few months later, boom, all of a sudden, like, I get this call. I start playing with Megadeth, and of course that helped a lot, you know. So it's allowed us to now kind of be in this next stage of our life where we can be a bit more comfortable. I have to work a bit less, like 24/7. I have a bit more time to spend time with her and with our dogs, and, you know, do some things here and there. You know, of course I still work a lot because everybody has to, but but you know, it's life is a bit more chill, and it's at a good time in my life.
Yeah, that's good to hear. How is it to meet your idols? Because I recommend that you met a lot of your idols.
Yes, I did, and you know, a lot of times it has been really, really great. I would say a majority of the time it's been absolutely mind-blowing, because a lot of my idols are, you know, of course Dave was one of them, and it's really cool to be playing with him and to get to know him as a person on a personal level is like mind-blowing stuff, you know. But also a lot of my idols are people like, for example, Shane Embury from Napalm Death, you know, who was a really big band for me growing up. Devin Townsend, you know, who's a good friend of mine and who I got to work with. People like Justin Broderick from Godflesh, another band that I grew up listening to, and there's many more, you know. And and all of these people have just been so down to earth and nice, and just, you know, sometimes they say don't meet your heroes, but in my case, like, my heroes have all, without almost any exception, been just fantastic people.
That's really good.
And I do stuff with a lot of them, you know, like a lot of us have like side projects together, or for example, Justin here remixed one of the tracks of my solo project for me, and so there's all this, like, all these really cool things that came from that, and that makes me really happy, because these are the people that when I was a teenager, they were everything to me. The music that was making was like, they were making was like my life, you know, that was like my reason to exist. And so all these years later, for them to be like, to see me on the same level that they are, and for them to be working with me and hanging out, and like, I can just text them or call them and be like, hey, you know, if Shane is in town, whatever, let's go have some food or whatever. It's incredible, you know. Same with Mitch Harris from Napalm Death. He's also a good friend. You know, whenever he lives in Las Vegas, so whenever my wife and I go there or something, we always meet up with Mitch and go have some beers. And it's incredible, you know. It's like the best.
It sounds like the best.
Absolutely.
So when you are on tour with Megadeth, I think it's it's a huge travel party, and you have everything, and so, and now you're on clinic tour, you have one van, and one guy from Tama, Chris. What else is different?
Well, I'd say outside of that, the biggest difference is that I'm also alone on stage, you know, so it's usually like I say sometimes in my clinics too, like, you don't choose to be a drummer to stand there on the front of the stage with a microphone talking to people. You choose to be a drummer because you want somebody else to do that part.
You can hide behind the cymbals.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it. So that was definitely the first time I started doing clinics, is now some years ago, you know, but that was a big learning curve for me, because again, a very introverted person by nature, and so I had to learn to be comfortable. And how does this work? How do I make it so that people have a good night? You know, and very scary in the beginning. In the beginning, I didn't really know how to do it. But now that I've done it, you know, a number of times, I've done some clinic tours. I in Europe, of course, and a couple of clinics in the U.S. I did two full tours in China by myself. You know, like going to all these
That's
cities
amazing.
In China
yes.
in like 2011, 2012, and it was just completely crazy experience.
Yeah.
But so you know, and nobody, of course, speaks English there, so yeah. everything was with translation and stuff. But I got comfortable with it, you know. And so that's, I think, it's the biggest difference with, you know, with Megadeth. I kind of have my role, and that's what I do. And here it's kind of up to me to make the show, if
mm-hmm.
you will.
Yeah.
So that's important to, you know, that's why the dialogue portion of the clinic and the Q&A and also even meeting with the fans afterwards mm-hmm. and stuff, these are very important elements of
yes.
the night, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Yes. I think that was it.
Thank very, you very cool.
Thank you very much, Duke.
Thank you for having me.
It was a
me.
Pleasure.
It was a real pleasure talking with you, Matt. And yeah, man, it's nice meeting you as well today.
Yeah. Thank you.
Excellent.
Goodbye.
Cheers. Take care.
Das war Bum Zack. Bis zum nächsten Mal.